Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Guilty Movie Pleasures.
Welcome to another episode of Guilty Movie Pleasures. Thank you for joining us today. I am your host once again today, Jesse McIntosh. Thank you very much. That is real applause that it's generated new every single time. We have a studio of fans in the other room, and we record their applause before we start, and then we play it for you all. There it is again. I am joined today by a very special guest, comedian and YouTuber, host of Why Aren't You Watching on Popcorn Talk, Anatomy of a Movie. On AfterBuzz, did I switch that?
He switched
I switched that.
So why are you watching AfterBuzz TV, Anatomy of a Movie, Popcorn Talk?
And the Twisted Maid?
The Twisted Nanny.
Oh, you guys screwed it all
right,
up.
Jesse,
the
on
Twisted
Lifetime.
Nanny on Lifetime. Check it out on Lifetime. We have a very special guest, Tara Erickson.
Hi, guys.
I had it, and then we added an additional credit moments before we started.
And that's what
and
messed
them all
up.
Threw everything off.
Yeah.
The dominoes fell. Also, renowned dominoes faller.
Yeah, it's because he's not a professional. That's, you know, it's like, oh, I get one detail, and I start malfunctioning.
That's a really good, we don't know each other too well, but that was a really good impression of me.
I know.
You've clearly been watching.
Boom, baby.
Just my, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Your breakdowns.
Head explosions. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, welcome to the show, Tara. Thank you so much for joining
us. Yes, I'm happy to be here.
Tell me about all of those things that you do.
Well, Why Aren't You Watching is a brand new show on AfterBuzz TV where I tell you what to watch weekly. I choose a new show that I think is bomb diggity dang. Talk about it, break down. Anatomy of a Movie, I love. We talk movies.
And the anatomy thereof.
The anatomy thereof. We break it down,
sure.
Jesse, to just the core parts.
There's one thing I know breaking it down.
I just did a little breakdown there. And then, I was, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. a lead in a movie called The Twisted Nanny. No, I'm not the nanny, but I am the lead. I play a mom. And it airs on Lifetime, and it's still airing now. But
you are not twisted.
I'm not twisted.
Okay.
Nope. I'm the only one in that movie that is not a crazy lady.
Well, congratulations on that.
Mm-hmm.
So check all of those things out. What should you be watching? It's The Twisted Nanny and the two shows here at AfterBuzz and Popcorn Talk.
Indeed.
So there we go. Thank you so much for joining us. You chose the movie today. I always like to have, when we have special guests on, we always like to give them the floor. And you chose for us today Bowfinger.
Yeah.
Tell us why.
Oh, God. I love everything about this movie. I think Eddie Murphy just does a phenomenal job. I, throughout my life, since I've seen this movie, walk around just being like, keep it together, keep it together, keep it together, from this movie. That is my phrase that I have now made mine since 1999. And that was a rhyme, but that's when the movie came out.
Sure.
So
happy accidents.
This movie, it's just so good. And it's so, it really, really hits hard on the tropes of Hollywood and LA.
Yes.
And, you know, I live here. You live here. Mm-hmm. We're doing the hustle. And when I was recently rewatching, I was like, oh, man, yeah, this is all so real.
I definitely had a new perspective on it watching it now than when I saw it. I think I actually saw this one in theaters in 1999. You as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember really liking it and thinking it was funny. But I didn't honestly remember too many details about it. I rewatched it recently. And just to piggyback on what you said, I thought, like, this is going to sound ridiculous, but I thought Eddie Murphy gives almost like an Oscar level performance when he comes in as the brother.
Yes.
And he's a totally different person. It's not like a character he's doing. He just like completely disappears. He's Eddie Murphy. Kit is Eddie Murphy.
Yes.
And it's very like obvious.
Yeah.
And then when he comes on about halfway through the movie as the brother, it's just, it's stunning the transformation that he makes.
I completely agree with you. When he comes in his GIF and he just like, he changes like his whole body and his mouth and he's just like his voice. But it's not like what you said. It's not like a character put on top of like a person. It's like he just becomes this like nerd alert with braces and you just believe him every second.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
It like made me think a little bit about like Dave Chappelle and Nick Swardson for some reason were the two people that it made me think of, but it was just like when those guys do characters like that, it always feels like a character. Mm-hmm. It always feels like they're projecting a little bit too much. And this was just so seamless and so beautifully done. Okay, so Eddie Murphy, Steve Martin. Are you a Steve Martin person?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, who doesn't love Steve Martin?
I don't know.
A good one.
Let's throw it out tonight. How many of you don't like Steve Martin?
I'm in the chat. Jonathan Peck, You let us know if Steve Martin's a yes or no. I'll keep checking in.
There you go. We'll monitor that situation.
We will.
As we go. How many times have you seen this movie, do you think?
Maybe like five, which is not a ton. I know that's not a ton. I do adore this movie. Probably like five times.
Okay. Is it your favorite Eddie Murphy performance? Is it your favorite Steve Martin? Like, do you have a list like that? Is it just sort of like exist outside of those parameters?
I guess I don't really have a list like that. It would be harder to say, I think, for Steve Martin, because like I always remember Father of the Bride for Steve Martin. I don't know why. That's like the first movie always comes to mind. And he was great in that. But yeah, I guess for both of them, I would be like, I love them both the most in Bowfinger.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, they're just, it's so good.
Yeah, I think the first thing, I would have to check the chronology on this, but the first thing I think I saw Eddie Murphy in ever was Dr. Doolittle.
Oh, yeah.
which is not great. Mm-mm. Not my favorite. I would have to, I mean, this is obviously not an iconic Eddie Murphy performance. Those come much earlier. But for me, I think this was the first thing that I saw him in that I loved him in. I think.
I would agree with you on that. Cause I know he did a lot of like the Dr. Doolittle and then the other movies where he did play a lot of characters transforming.
Yeah.
But it's nothing like it is here in Bowfinger.
Yeah. So we've just spent a lot of time like genuinely praising the movie Bowfinger, which is very funny. And we are going to, I just want to check in with Ryan. Ryan, you said you've never seen this movie?
Never seen the flick.
Okay. Do you have an explanation for yourself or,
I think it's just sheer, lack of effort on my part. And yeah. I really blew it on this one, guys. And you know, maybe I'll make a promise to see it.
Maybe you'll make a promise is about as weak a commitment Vague as we could have possibly gotten from Ryan. Well, maybe we can convince you as we go through.
Let's do it.
We are going to do the plot in under 3 minutes.
Okay, I love it. Jonathan Peck and CrazyNut56 said yes for Steve Martin.
Fantastic. All right, good. So
plot in under 3 minutes. We share the 3 minutes, right?
We're going to share the 3 minutes.
Great.
This is much harder than it sounds.
We're going to do it.
And we're going to do it. We'll just volley back and forth. Yep. I will kick it off, Ryan.
And I'll count you in. Y'all are starting the plot in under 3 minutes. In three.
Making me sweat.
Two.
Okay.
One.
All right. So we start on Steve Martin, who's out of work, out of luck, movie producer / director. He gets a script. He's finishing the script from an accountant that he knows. He calls the accountant. He calls everyone in for the meeting, the accountant, the actor. And he's like, we're going to make this movie. This is a brilliant movie. It's about aliens coming down in the rain. He's like, I have a meeting with a producer and I'm going to pitch this to him today. So he goes, he meets Jamie Kennedy, who gives him a car.
Yes.
He steals a suit. He goes, he meets Robert Downey Jr., I put in quotation marks because he sort of like crashes the meeting. Yeah. And he's like, I have this great movie. Here is a script. Do you want to read it? And he looks through and he says, no, absolutely not. He says, what if I get Kit to be in it? And he says, if you get Kit, then you can do it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then he goes and he asks, he sneaks into Kit's place and is like, hey, here's a script. Kit's like, get out of here. Steve Martin mentions Mindhead, but that does not go over well. He eventually gets kicked out of the limo. And so he convinces the team that he actually hired to be in this movie, which includes Heather Graham. She comes in, she's like out of Minnesota and like sees a sign and is like auditions and like they hire her. And then a few other people, any Hoosier, he tells the team that Kit cannot see the camera, does not need to know who the actors are. We have to act around him so that they can still have Kit in the movie and have Jerry Renfro, like, produce it.
Yeah, so unfortunately what they don't know is that Kit is deathly afraid of aliens, it sounds like, and they're making an alien movie. So all the, like, hidden camera, all the, like, ambush-style cinema that they're doing is all, like, presenting him with these alien-possessed people or people who are afraid of aliens. So it really starts to get in his head about it. They, like, Heather Graham runs out of his house, like, sneaks into his house and runs after him in the car, and he's like, who's Keith? She's yelling Keith. And then they, like, he's at lunch and Christine Baranski comes up and gives, like, a tremendous monologue.
Yeah, it's so good.
And he starts to freak out. And then Heather Graham wants to, like, get more scenes in where she's naked. And so they're like, all right, well, we need a double for that. So they do auditions for a butt double and they find Eddie Murphy's brother.
Yes. And then Eddie Murphy is in the movie. They have a whole scene, the freeway scene. Oh my God, it's the best scene. So they pick that up. Jif, his brother, he does all these scenes. And then eventually it's revealed that Jif is actually Kit's real brother.
Yep.
And they have a hard time being like, like, how are we going to complete this movie? And then
Christine Baranski had like walked in on him in a clothing store, and she was like, I know where I'll be. So they go and they like ambush him at this clothing thing, and he starts running away, and he gets into the car with Heather Graham, and Heather Graham's like, let's go to the observatory and then we can defeat the aliens. But Minehead found out about it, so they come in and try and stop it, and then they shut it down, and they're like,
but they get undercover footage of Eddie Murphy showing the Laker girls, and then they get their movie made.
Yep. And they watch it, and then he gets to do a movie in Taiwan.
Time's
up.
We did it. Whew, that's stressful. I can't. I would not be able to lead that. I'd be like,
I've done it multiple times where I've rolled right into doing the podcast after immediately having seen the movie, and I still can't do it. It's really, really hard.
It's hard.
To do. Yes. But so let's get into this movie a little bit.
Let's do it.
All right. Yeah, it's a great idea. So the first sound clip is actually the very beginning, where Steve Martin is reading this script, and he's talking to his dog, who I love the runner of the dog just like sleeping on its back with his legs splayed out. It's a tremendous visual that we get.
Betsy. Over and over again.
But so he's reading the script and he's talking to the dog, and he says this to his dog.
It's now or never. We are going to make a movie.
And that really sets it up right there. It's now or never. We don't really ever get real stakes as to why. Like, the few sort of, like, ends that we're sort of piecing together are Steve Martin is 49.
Yeah.
And 50-year-olds don't get jobs in Hollywood.
Right.
Christine Baranski is going... She's about to accept a small role in Cats.
Mm-hmm.
Non-locally, so she will not be available to his production either. And those are the only, like, real reasons we get for why it has to be done right now. But I appreciate his ambition. I appreciate the urgency that he feels in himself.
Ageism in Hollywood will really make you run quickly.
I guess so.
Yeah, it will.
Will it?
I know it.
There you go. A cautionary tale. So, like we said, he reads the script and he loves the script. And we never really find out what is going on in this movie, really. Like, he gives us sort of an overview. Aliens are coming down in the raindrops.
Mm-hmm.
But aside from that, do you know what happens in this movie?
No, just that that Kit Ramsey is being, like, tortured by these people because he prefers alien love. And they, like, worked in all this, like, alien stuff into it and, you know, death. And no, it's like they make fun of the tropes of, like, action movies and then, like, sci-fi and then everything else, I guess.
I guess it's, like, funny. I mean, it makes sense within the context of this movie, but it makes sense that we never see a scene that doesn't involve him.
Right.
Right. We never, like, see contextualizing like anything at all.
You mean without Kit?
Yeah, without Kit.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, they used his, what's his brother's name?
Right, his brother. Yeah, you're right. Except for, nope, I'm wrong. Yeah, you're right. It was only ever Jif, which plays Kit. Right. The I guess, yeah, all the scenes were with him the entire time.
Yeah, and the only GIF scenes are the one that you refer to where he's running across the highway.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure what good that does.
That one end where he has a sexy scene with Heather Graham when she takes off her top.
He does have a hot scene.
Oh my God, that's my favorite part when he smiles. And that was ad lib. He smiles at Heather Graham. You get a pickup of him in his braces and he's like, "You're doing great." Yeah. And he's like, "You're going to be a star." And he's just smiling like that the whole time. That was all ad lib. And I'm like, thank God they kept that in. It is one of the funniest parts in the movie.
I did not know that. That's very funny. And it also like sort of, I guess, sort of softens the blow. Like he's sort of our avatar in that moment of like, oh, I'm not super comfortable with what they're doing here.
So good.
Yeah. Okay. So he calls this, his crew, and he's letting them know that he's going to meet with the big time producer to see if he can get this movie made. And he gives them this sign off here.
"I will see you at the Oscars."
High hopes for Chubby Rain.
Oh boy, is it.
I'm trying to think of a low budget science fiction alien movie that
has been made it to the Oscars. I don't think there has been one.
Right.
There was that. What was that space movie with Sandra Bullock like 3 years ago?
Gravity.
Yeah, that would have gotten an Oscar, right?
Yes.
But that's not low budget. I know it. You guys are like, that wasn't low. I get it.
Right.
But I was not in love with that movie. I mean, I thought it looked very cool. I understand why it did win an Oscar. I don't remember. Any Hoosier. That's the only sci-fi movie that I can, or space type movie that I can think of that has won an Oscar recently.
Right.
I
would have to look at a list.
That'd be great if they added in Space Jam. That would give me hope of just like, hey, I'm in stuff sometimes and maybe I have a chance at being on that stage and holding that little golden statue.
There's hope. Everyone has hope. And that is the story of Bowfinger.
It's true.
Everyone has a dream.
Mm-hmm.
So then we get introduced to Eddie Murphy, who is wanting, he also wants an Oscar, interestingly enough. Mm-hmm. That's our introduction to him, is he's talking about how he wants a meaty role and all the meaty roles go to white guys like Jean-Claude Van Damme and Arnold Schwarzenegger. And so he's talking about how he wants like a catchphrase and his agent is pitching him. And this is their interaction right here.
"You say, 'I enjoy meeting you, Cliff.' Then you push the guy right over the cliff. That's too much for the audience to have to think about. They have to know that the guy's name is Cliff, and that he's on a cliff, and that a cliff and a cliff is the same. It's too cerebral."
He's right. That's a metaphor, and we can't be dealing with metaphors.
No, audience, we don't want that. We want literal.
Yes, yes. As an example, his hasta la vista, baby, is the example that he gives there when he's talking to his agent. So he wants a meaty role. He wants a fun sign-off, and he's not getting it. None of the scripts that are coming in are what he wants. So that's our introduction to Eddie Murphy. I've also found it interesting because it plays such a big part in what's going on. It's just crazy to me that like it's not common knowledge in the world that he's afraid of aliens. Like there's no mention of aliens until he makes it to Mindhead.
To Mindhead, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when he's with his... I guess you're right. He doesn't really have like that, like anxiety ridden.
No,
like,
he's like cool guy.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I guess you're with his agent. He didn't come off as like, there's no part. I can't remember, but I think you're right. There's no like conspiracy theory type deal in his conversation with his agent.
No, he's just being sort of a diva.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. It doesn't really come to play until he gets in Mindhead, but it makes sense why you would keep that all locked inside. Because Mindhead is based off like Scientology. So
yes.
I assume if you went outside of Scientology, you probably wouldn't want to talk about it until you get to the truth meter at Mindhead. And then you're like, I want to show it to the Laker girls and aliens, you know?
These are two like very specific and very strange things that are going on with Eddie Murphy. And they're just like very fortunate that the confluence of events here, that they're making an alien movie and that's his thing, and that he wants to expose himself to Laker girls,
right.
And they were able to capture that. I also find it funny, we're going to skip ahead for a moment, that in the B-roll footage, when they see him exposing himself to Laker girls, no one who caught that footage was ever like, hey, Bowfinger, there's a situation here.
Yeah.
We caught him disguising himself and exposing full frontal to the Laker girls.
Probably because they were brought in from the desert and have seen it all. So that footage was like, just another day.
Sure. Perhaps. Although we get like a little glimpse of them at the end, like apparently
they're professionals now, which I adore that moment.
Yeah. It's just osmosis. They brought it all in.
It's great.
This script is brutal. Let's hear number four, because I forget where this is from.
It's all good. It's script is butter.
What?
Butter. This stuff is butter. It's all good. It's a cheeky baby.
Well, that's why I didn't recognize it, because I was autocorrected. Brutal for butter.
Got it.
The script is butter. Yeah. Butter.
Yeah.
So that's Steve Martin. So after he goes and meets Robert Downey Jr. And there's a couple of fun gags in that scene. Mm. The first, which we have to mention, is his tiny ponytail, which is extremely distracting for the first 10 minutes of the movie. He just unclips it. Mm-hmm. What was your reaction to the unclipped ponytail?
Oh God. I mean, when he's like, oh yeah, you can, doesn't he say like, oh, you can,
he like takes it off and then he has it. And then
it comes up on the,
takes it out of his pocket.
Yes. When he hands him the card and he's like, oh, you can, doesn't he say you can have that. Yeah. Oh, I loved it so much.
Yeah. Do you feel like that made him look younger? Cause he's been grasping for youth here. Was that like an attempt to be young and hip, to have a tiny clip on ponytail
in 1999? Yes.
Maybe. We hopped in a time machine for this one. Mm-hmm. So he does that. And then he also, yanks the car phone.
I love this part.
Out of the car that he's stolen temporarily. He tucks the cord into his sleeve and he's talking on the phone and he gets away with it at first. And then when he goes to shake Robert Downey Jr.'s hand, he has to take it out. And then when he makes another call to Eddie Murphy, the cord is exposed and he's just talking to no one.
He's having an entire conversation.
Yeah. And Robert Downey Jr. is like, hey, do you mind if I talk to him? And he's like, oh yeah, no problem. Hello.
Kit.
Yeah.
Kit. Oh, bad reception. Kit.
Yep. and then he hands him the script. Robert Downey Jr. reads the first page and the last page and says, no, that's all right. But what if I can get Eddie Murphy to do it? What if I can get Kit to do it? And he says, yeah, okay. If you can get Kit to do it, we'll do it. Mm-hmm. So he goes, he sneaks in as the delivery guy and we can just hear this again. This is how he tries to like warm himself up to Eddie Murphy.
Happy premise number one.
Let's go back to number four real quick.
It's all good. It's script is butter.
What?
Butter. This stuff is butter. It's all good. It's a cheeky baby.
I've never heard any of that before.
It's a cheeky baby. I'm using that now and forever.
Yes.
For anything good. I'd be like, it's a cheeky baby.
Well, and then the funniest part to me, it got all muddled, so I couldn't grab it in sound. But Eddie Murphy just like uses it back to him, where he's like, how do you know it's a cheeky baby? It's like, well, did you read my stuff? We talked about, he gets in the car with him because he's like, yeah, I'm going to Minehead also. He's like, I'll come with me. And then we don't hear what happens, but he gets kicked out of the car. He obviously has been exposed as fraudulent. But then we find out what Minehead is. He goes to this clearly like, it's a cult-like spa is the best I can describe it. And mm-hmm. Everyone's wearing sort of paper triangle hats.
Welcome to Mindhead.
That just keeps
Welcome to Mindhead.
On repeat. So we get into the session with Eddie Murphy and his shaman?
Yeah, I guess.
And we find out what the three happy premises are of Mindhead. Let's hear that.
Happy premise number one. There are no aliens.
Happy premise number two.
Happy premise number two. There is no giant foot trying to squash me.
Happy premise number three.
Happy premise number three. Even though I feel like I might ignite, I probably won't.
Why does he say it so fast? It makes me laugh every time they're like, happy premise number two. And he's like, happy premise number two. Yeah. And you're like, God, it's like, so quick.
I just can't wait to get it out.
So great.
Yeah, it's very funny. I wish that they had incorporated all three of these things into their movie. We never got a foot coming down on anyone. We did get people almost igniting twice with the fireplace.
Yes, that's true.
Steve Martin's house / office.
Yeah.
So this is clearly a very specific and very uncomfortable cult that Eddie Murphy is involved in.
That he pays so much money for.
Yes. Steve Martin comes back to his crew, and as you said, in the 3 minutes, he's like, we're doing the movie. He doesn't want to talk to anyone. He doesn't want anyone acknowledging that you're doing the movie. So, and he only wants to do one take of every scene, which is extremely unreasonable. But they're working on a shoestring budget. So yeah. I guess I get it.
I mean, it's so great though, when he does come in and he's like, and he's thinking about telling him he didn't agree.
Right.
And it's written in as though Steve Martin came up with it on the spot. And he's like, he's going to do it. He can't know we're there. He can't know there's cameras and it's only one take.
Yes.
He makes it up like right on the spot. And you're just like, got it.
And then he gives us the like cork board. He's like storyboarded this whole thing. He's like, we only need him for six scenes.
Yeah.
Which is also crazy. But he's like, we only need him for six scenes. And the first one is him just leaving the house, I guess. And that's the first scene in the movie because he gives us like the Sharpie cross off of the very first index card on his corkboard. But the first scene in the movie is Heather Graham running after him with a briefcase, screaming his name.
Keith!
Yeah.
Keith! You have to got your briefcase!
And she's doing an incredible accent, which sure why.
I don't know what it is.
And everyone, both women, when they give their like emotional outbursts, go like full body.
Yeah. Christine Razzie, when she's like, damn you, why? And she's like, because you wanted, oh, do you have
we
it?
We have it.
Oh my
so
God,
let's do number,
I'm not going to do it.
Let's skip ahead and do number seven.
Yes, please.
When you left Phoenix, it wasn't because you wanted to raise soybeans. You had to get away. Why? Why was it because you wanted me and it burned inside of you?
I beg your pardon.
Come back to Phoenix. Stop this madness. Let me in on whatever mission this is that you're doing.
Do you know who I am?
Of course. You're Keith Kincaid. You've come down from Wyoming with your damn UFOs. You bastard! Bastard! Bastard!
It's so good. But then she says, I know all you wanted is alien love. And then she does the weirdest move is at the end. And she's like, going to get my umbrella. And she like sings and walks off at the end. Those are the last two lines.
It's an insane performance.
It's crazy great.
Bastard.
But it's so good. It's so funny. And I actually, it made me want to know what part she got cast in Cats. And
me too.
I would have loved to see that version. C'est la vie. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just watch all of Christine Baranski's movies and I think you'll be fulfilled.
Listen, The Good Wife, The Good Fight, hidden
both. Baby.
Yeah. This was a conversation. Christine Baranski really wants to like have a conversation with him before their scenes. And Steve Martin is like, absolutely not. He won't do it. He wants like an authentic reaction. And Christine Baranski says number six.
He may not be a professional, but I am.
Interestingly, right before we started this podcast, I went to go grab some water and Ryan and Tara were in here just chatting about what the show was going to be. And I came back, I was like right on the outside of the door and I heard right before I walked in, this is what I heard her say.
He may not be a professional, but I am.
It's like, wow.
It's true. What? Did you see how badly he messed up the intro? Yeah.
Everyone saw and heard. And no one was surprised, I will say. Everyone was like, that tracks.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Typical Jesse.
Yep. So Heather Graham wants to be in more of this movie.
Bastard!
Yeah. Heather Graham has aspirations to be a movie star, and she is gonna sleep with whoever it takes.
She sure is.
To get there. So she starts in a relationship, we'll say, with the other actor.
Yeah, like the lead, like, sexy guy.
Yeah, the lead sexy guy, we'll call him.
Yeah.
And then she's like, I want to be in more of this movie. And he's like, all right, well, you're going to have to talk to the writer.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, interesting, the writer.
Mm-hmm.
Which, like, this entire movie relies on just the dumbest group of people that you could possibly find. I'm very concerned for, like, with the amount of money that everyone got, like, all the union rules being broken here.
Oh, everything, because he says it only takes $2,184 to make a movie, which is one of my most favorite lines.
He has that in cash and in ones.
Yeah, in ones, in a little tin.
In a little tin. He actually, like, goes through the whole story where he's like, every week since I was seven, I put a dollar. He doesn't account for inflation, which I think is a mistake, and I think a 49-year-old would have known that.
He's a 49-year-old trying to hustle still in Hollywood, so I don't think so.
I mean, how he could have, at least the $5 he spent on that ponytail, he could have put in that box, you know what I mean?
That, like, ponytail gets him into the Ivy, Jesse, and that matters.
I mean, okay, fair point. I tried to push back and I couldn't. But so he has $2,184 bills. And sort of, like, towards the middle of the movie, he's down to, like, 17. It looks like. I would love to know where he spent this money, because I don't think it's on locations or equipment or people, because they're stealing equipment and they're not paying people and they're just going to wherever they need
lunch.
To. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Starbucks.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, yeah. They do a lot of Starbucks.
They do a lot
runs.
Of Starbucks.
Yeah. That's a big plug for Starbucks in this movie.
Also, did you know that Heather Graham's character was based off Anne Heche? And there, yes, it's based off Anne Heche, because Anne Heche was known for having a relationship with an older guy, aka, you know, Steve Martin, in When Heather Starts to Sleep with Steve Martin, Sleeping Her Way to the Top. And then there's a callback line at the very end where Heather says, like, something about, like, getting to sleep with, or I was with, the most powerful lesbian in like LA.
Yeah.
And that's a call to Anne Heche when she was with Ellen DeGeneres.
Interesting.
And when I read that, I was like, what?
That's so funny.
It's hilarious.
And there you go.
There's Anne Heche, baby.
Yep. I assumed that they did that at the end just to make it less demeaning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
because
say,
it was,
like,
pretty bad. Yes.
Yeah, it's pretty uncomfortable, not super aged well.
Yeah.
It probably wasn't great at the time.
No.
I have no recollection.
This movie would never pass now. I watch it and I'm like, there's no way that this movie, they'd be like, A-okay. The one thing that you're like, oh, maybe, is that Heather Graham is making the decisions, not the guys.
Yes.
She is totally in complete control of what she's doing with herself and her body, and she's choosing to do it.
And the guys, like, I guess to their credit, are all, like, disappointed, but just sort of like, meh, all right.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I guess I saw that coming a little bit.
Yeah.
I sort of knew in the back of my mind that's what was going on here.
Yeah.
And they also do a thing, so I'm going to cut back and forth here, but because we were talking about her wanting to get in more scenes, she ultimately ends up with Steve Martin.
Mm-hmm.
And in that scene where they're about to have sex, he steals her credit card, and they have a very funny exchange where they're both clearly using the other one for something. She is basically like, I would never take advantage of you. And he says, well, I would never break your trust. And they're both clearly about to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess handled as best as you can handle something like this in Bowfinger. But so she wants to be in more of the movie. She's talking about all these things that she would do to get in the movie more. She sleeps with the writer to get these scenes. And then the writer's like, well, the decision comes down to Steve Martin. And she's like, all right, well, then I'll sleep with Steve Martin. And they go on and they have a date. This is Heather Graham saying what she would do for more scenes in the movie.
You'll do this?
Well, if I have to, if it's for the movie and you really, really want me to, and if it's not just about nudity, but if it's artistic and it says something about reality, and if it's in character, and if it's for the scene, and if it's not just a body.
Right.
Look, she has a standard.
She's got some morals.
She does. Mm-hmm. And if you're not living up to them, she's not going to do it.
She's not going to do it.
But she would really like to do it.
But she would really like to do it for some more screen time.
My favorite part about her going over to Steve Martin's place on this date is that Steve Martin has prepared nothing at all until the moment she knocks on the door. And then he's got to, like, put the bed back in the wall, put the money away. He's got to light the candle, put the wine in the other bottle so it looks better.
Tie up Betsy's legs together so they're not wide open.
Yep. So he's got a lot going on here. There was one thing that I wanted to talk about also. One of the scenes they shoot is in a parking lot, and Eddie Murphy is walking to his car in the Mindhead parking lot, and they're filming him, and behind the row of cars they have the dog walking in high heels to sort of make the noise of Christine Baranski, who later we find out in the movie is, like, following him in the movie. But she's not there at that moment. And getting his genuine reactions of, like, someone's following me. What's going on? And this is incredible to me because I have a dog, and we put our dog in – we went up to Northern California to, like, Lake Tahoe, and we brought our little dog. And it was snowing, so we got these, like, little shoes to put on her. And dogs in shoes, they cannot do it.
They freeze, right?
They freeze, and they start, like, walking in a really unnatural way. This dog was in high heels and was a champ.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
When you watch it, you're just like, wow, this dog is so well-trained to just be like, and she walks straight. She doesn't even walk weird. She walks totally, and then it's like, when he says stay, she's like,
it's unbelievable. So ready. Her gait is natural.
Yeah, it's so true.
It's at a proper pace.
So great.
It's well done out of that dog. So then we have Eddie Murphy describing what happens when aliens come down.
She wants to inhale my gonads.
Say again?
My gonads. What they do is they come down and shake your hands. The aliens pretend they're shaking your hands, but they're not. They inhale your gonads and take them back to their world for special research.
There's research. He's so, like, happy at the end.
I want to compare that, because that was Eddie Murphy being Eddie Murphy, mm-hmm. to this is where we meet the brother, mm-hmm. Eddie Murphy's brother. And this made me laugh so hard when they asked him if he'd be willing to cut his hair, because he's got sort of, like, almost like a mullet.
Yeah.
He's got, like, a long in the back, short up top. They ask him if he'd be willing to cut his hair, and this is what he says.
Would you be willing to cut your hair?
Oh, yes, but it's usually better if someone else does it.
He's just so embarrassed in that moment.
Yeah, and he's so matter of fact. And that role, the Eddie Murphy role, is actually originally written for Keanu Reeves.
What?
Which I can't even envision that ever. Like, I just can't. I love Keanu. I mean, John Wick for life, baby. But, like, just this role, it's like Eddie Murphy is just so ingrained in my brain that I'm like, I wonder how Keanu would have played the two parts.
Yeah.
I've never seen Keanu in a comedic role where he's playing two.
I actually, nothing against Keanu, but I think that it probably would have been bad.
I totally agree. And the Eddie Murphy was the best choice.
Yes, this performance relies on a megastar, and then, like, a complete counterbalance to that being played by the exact same person. And, like, we've worn it out already. Eddie Murphy kills it. I don't know if
Keanu could, like, morph into a Nerd Alert that you don't recognize.
Right. Yes. Okay. So they have the brother. We got to cover a lot of ground here in a couple of minutes.
We're going to do it.
Mm-hmm. So do you want to take away the highway scene? Because that's your favorite scene, you said.
Oh my God, it's so good. They just tell him, they're like, listen, Jeff, you're going to go across the freeway. And he's looking at the cars. He's like, well, what about the cars? And they're like, oh, it's professional stunt drivers. And he just goes, he's smiling through his braces. And he's like, oh. Professionals, like, he believes them. He goes across the freeway and he's just against the wall. He looks terrified. It's so good. He comes out. Nope. He goes back a couple times, but he finally makes it all the way across. And when you watch that scene, it looks so realistic.
Yeah.
And I realized that they CGI'd the cars in after. They shut down a Los Angeles freeway for 2 days to film that scene. He makes it across, and they're like, great job. And he's like, Mother God, Mother God, Mother God. He's terrified. And they try to soothe him because he loves running errands. Steve Martin's like, what I'm going to give you, you're going to go to Starbucks. You're going to get coffees. And he's like, yeah, I would love to get some coffees. And then Steve's like, great, you're going to do that, but you're going to do this one more time. And it cuts to him doing it one more time, and he's just yelling the entire time, Heavenly God, Heavenly God, Heavenly God, which is just, it's the best thing in this movie.
My favorite part, thinking about this scene, is the idea that, yes, he had to run across for the shot twice, but how did he get across?
In the first place.
In the first place. Yeah. So he had to go across.
Like four times.
Four times, because he had to go across to get there to film it, and then go across again and come back across. So funny. So, they're celebrating the victory of this shot. They're all having a meal together, shooting the crap. And it comes out that he's the brother. And Steve Martin has sort of like a crisis of conscience where he's like, I don't know if I could do this. Like, he's such a nice guy. And he was saying all this about like, finally a group of people who like me for me. I don't know if I can take advantage of him this way. And Jamie Kennedy sort of like talks him down from that. Mm-hmm. It's like, you'll do what's right here. But they feel like they got to finish this movie. So they need this final scene. They need Eddie Murphy to scream,
gotcha suckas
at the top of the observatory. So they get in a car chase with him, but it's the sexy actor guy, lead actor guy, is driving in reverse. So he's driving in reverse. Eddie Murphy's car is now also driving in reverse. And then a police car comes, and it's a three-car chase, and they're filming it all
behind these trees.
Behind a tree attached to an ice cream truck. Yeah. So very inventive on their part. Heather Graham gets him, like she runs in, she gets in a fight, she gets him in the car and is like trying to tell him what's going on, like this is how you defeat the aliens.
Right.
They get all the way up to the top of the
observatory. The writer alien guy, though, is the one, the reason he gets in the car is because the writer alien guy formed this hat to make guts come out of his head, and it's just one moment in the film where he's like, arr! And all this stuff starts cutting down, and then Eddie Murphy's like, oh, yeah, I'll get in that car.
And then his arm falls off.
It's so good.
Yeah.
And then they on their way to the observatory.
So on their way to the observatory, they get up, and she's just like, keeps popping up and being like, yes, I got you, suckers. Yes, I got you, suckers. And he like won't do it. He's so freaked out. And then helicopters from Mindhead come in and shut the whole thing down. They think they're going to have to scrap this whole movie because they didn't get that final line.
Sometimes people who are paranoid are actually paranoid for a reason, is what like the lead guy in Mindhead says, like, because they're being followed.
So they come in and they're like, oh, we have all this B-roll. We've been following him around in case we need to patch things together. And he's like, I don't know why you're showing this to me. And he's like, just look through it. They look through it. And it's been a recurring thing where Eddie Murphy's been like, I really want to show my junk to the Laker girls. And Mindhead keeps being like, please don't show your junk to the Laker girls. He's like, but I really want to.
I
want to
show it.
Yeah. And then so we get an image of him in the front row of the Laker game with the Laker girls. And he's just like stewing.
Yeah.
And then we get after the game, he puts a bag over his head and then goes and exposes himself. And they just laugh hysterically. So they take this footage to Mindhead and they're like, we could ruin this guy. He's your biggest donor. What can you do for us? And then we got to the premiere and everyone's enjoying themselves. We get the gotcha suckas line at the end. Robert Downey Jr. notices his car is in the movie.
Yeah.
It's a lot of things all fall into place. And then we find out that the thing that I identified most with in this entire movie is Steve Martin is just a dude who loves to get mail.
Yeah, he's been waiting for a FedEx guy to feel important. He never gets FedExes.
At the end of the movie, FedEx comes, slow motion, gives him a package. It's a script he's being offered to direct a movie in Taiwan.
Fake person ninjas. And it's a great callback because in the beginning of the movie, he does say, one day, that truck is going to come in here and casually throw an envelope on my desk, and then I'll know I've made it.
Yep.
And then the callback in the end is so great because it's like lit up and it's slow-mo. It's so corny. And then also super corny that it's starring Jif, not Kit. It's starring his brother.
And we see a little clip of that, and he is, let me tell you, Jif, not an action guy.
No.
He's very tentative, let's say, in fighting.
I watched that scene, and I was like, they turned themselves over? Like, I didn't know that in the stunts. They don't even need, like, I was like, oh, they're going to use his arm, maybe. They don't. They don't even touch you, and they just flip themselves over, and this movie, the end of it, I was like, I had no idea. I thought at least the other partner helped him.
Nope.
They offer no help in this, and it's amazing.
Just a lot of core strength.
So good.
That's all it is. So at the end of every show, what we started doing is rating the movie.
Mm.
Do you feel like this was guilty but terrible, guilty but amazing, or just a guilty movie pleasure?
Man, guilty but amazing. I'm going for it. It's rated 81% Rotten Tomatoes. It's got a 6.7 on IMDb. So I think enough people like it. It is kind of a guilty pleasure because of how corny it is.
Yes.
It's not like, wow, amazing cinematography, great film.
No.
But it's a guilty pleasure that I think when you invite people over, they're going to get a laugh or two.
I would also say, like what we talked about earlier, in the pantheon of Eddie Murphy and Steve Martin movies, this is not the first one that comes to mind. So I think that if I were to go to someone and say, I love Bowfinger, they'd be like, really?
What?
They're other? Yeah. So guilty in that respect, but it's so many laughs in this movie. It was so well played for what it was. I would also say guilty but amazing. Ryan, see Bowfinger, please.
Yeah, I rewatched it last week with a friend who had never seen it.
Yeah.
And then after, he was like, that was a really good movie. And we talked all about Eddie Murphy's performance.
Yes.
That was so amazing. Why isn't talked about more? Had a bunch of fun conversations about it. And it's still, that is my everyday of being like Bowfinger. And people be like, what's that? So watch it.
So there you go. If you haven't seen it, watch it. I hope we inspired you to watch it today. Tara, where can we find you on social media?
Yes, guys, you can find me on Instagram at Tara Erickson. That's TaraErickson. Please find me on YouTube under Tara Erickson and IMDb, please. Thank you.
There we go. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Too Much Jesse for sketch at The Prom Losers. You can find us at Guilty Movie Guys. Don't forget to rate and review. And we will see you next time. What is your guilty movie pleasure?
Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network. We would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.